We want the power for the people. That's all we ask in our country, dear. The sick and the hungry unable. Protect them and those who may live in fear.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jeremiah Gooker, who writes about American politics and culture. His current work is focused on security, race, and the Republican Party, of which he is a former member. His recent work has been featured in Salon, The American Prospect, Tom Dispatch, and The Huffington Post. And he has an article at truthout.org, Shot by Their Own Men, How the Virginia Senate Inadvertently Predicts Republican Decline. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeremiah Gooker.
Thanks for having me again, Ian. Always a pleasure.
And a lot of what's being said now by people like John McCain, for example, in addressing the immigration issue is that the Republican Party is losing the support of minorities, particularly Hispanics and Latinos, and therefore, I don't know whether they see it as a public relations problem or they genuinely are capable of having a change of heart, but that seems to be the focus on their idea of fixing the demographic problem. But they're also going after, essentially trying to rig the game and rig the playing field via the Electoral College. So I take it you think these two things are mutually exclusive in a way.
Yeah, in a way. The basic issue is that if the Republicans really, truly believe that they were going to be able to win enough Hispanic votes to simply win in a normal Democratic approach, then maybe we would see them actively shutting up the xenophobic part of the party and actually pushing to get Hispanics the vote, particularly ones who aren't citizens yet, to get them the vote sooner rather than later, to do less voter suppression type policies and try to actually get Hispanics out voting. Now, that fact that they're not doing that suggests that they know that they've got a long way to go in terms of getting significant Hispanic votes, even just in a slicing and dicing approach to maybe just grab a few here and there to win some narrow elections. Of course, if they go to this approach of trying to wiggle with the Electoral College, that's just basically a showing that they know that they can't win on a statewide Democratic front. And, well, they want to rig the system so they can win. And, you know, the initial talk that we've seen in several states, and we saw the head of the RNC, Republican National Commission, suggest that this is maybe a good idea, would be to change voting rules within states, and of course states have control of their electoral process, but instead of having the Electoral College vote go to who wins overall within a state, to dole out the votes on a basis of congressional districts, whoever wins which congressional district would go. And in states where they've already been able to gerrymander the seats in a way that advantages Republicans, when you look at the numbers that way, it would lead to many more electoral votes going to Republicans, as Romney actually would have won the election in the Electoral College that way, even though he still would have lost the public vote by 5 million votes.
In your article at truthout.com, Jeremiah Gooker, Shot by Their Own Men, How the Virginia Senate Inadvertently Predicts Republican Decline, you point out that on the very day of the inauguration, when President Obama was speaking about Selma, Seneca Falls, and Stonewall, the Republican Senate in Virginia was proposing to honor another Stonewall, in this case Stonewall Jackson. And that was, of course, the day that they slipped through while a key Democrat was attending the inaugural. And, of course, the inaugural happened on Martin Luther King's birthday, and this key Democrat was a well-known civil rights leader. He was at the inauguration and the MLK celebrations, and while they were talking about celebrating a Confederate slave owner, they also slipped through this attempt at gerrymandering and changing the Electoral College, which now they've had to retreat from. So explain to us what this pushback is and where it's coming from. And I'm somewhat surprised, frankly, that you can shame people who appear to be shameless.
Right. Well, there's two separate parts of this. One is changing congressional districts and state-level legislative districts. And then there's the aspect of changing how the Electoral College goes. And so from my last look at this, the redistricting within Virginia is still moving forward, but Virginia has backed off of the idea of changing the Electoral College. And it does look like this has gotten enough notice nationally that the governors in Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania, where there's been talk of pushing this change for Electoral College, are backing off. And the Virginia bill to change Electoral College within Virginia got that bill passed a subcommittee but got struck down in committee. So it is interesting that there have been enough Republicans who've seen that this is going to blow up in their face. And you know, maybe, who knows, maybe they're realizing that in the long term, if they were actually successful in changing the Electoral College on a state level basis like this, next in 2016, and a Republican wins after being crushed by the popular vote, that's a pretty good way to actually lead to a national level movement to simply abolish the Electoral College entirely and lead to an actual Democratic approach to presidential elections in this country. And Republicans may think that they're better off with the Electoral College than they are with full actual democracy. I mean, as you'll often hear Republicans say, it's a republic and not a democracy. And, you know, I was talking to somebody at one of the right-wing think tanks who said that America, what they really wanted in 2012 was not Obama. And I asked, well, is that true? I mean, how many people voted? What if we really got everyone out to vote? Do you think that they really wanted Romney? And his response was, well, I don't think anyone really wants everyone to come out and vote.
Well, that has been characteristic of American politics. You have one party, the Democrats, who have a natural majority but fail to inspire enough of those people to vote often. And when they do, they win. And on the other hand, you got a minority party that depends upon Democrats voting for them, and they are able to get every one of their people out to vote on a regular basis, but their numbers are declining because of the changing demographics. So that's their challenge. So now they're resorting to how they can cheat. But the genesis for so much of their success, electorally and particularly in the control of the House, goes back to 2010, doesn't it? And that's the difference that I see, is that the Republicans have got strategic thinkers like Karl Rove, who saw the opportunity to capture the governorships and legislatures in all of these key swing states, and went ahead and did it.
Yep, that's true. And then they were successful at it. And since you have every 10 years the census, where there's a moment for reapportionment of seats, whoever is in control of a state legislature gets to make those changes. And yeah, it's been working for the Republicans in a, at least in the short term way. And when, as I say in my article, I think that in the long term, it's going to shoot them in the foot, because when you create really safe seats, it creates a single-party politics dynamic where the incumbent, rather than having to fight off someone in the other party and therefore play somewhat moderate politics, instead has to fight off extremist party primary challengers from within his or her own party, causing that incumbent to prostrate themselves to the extremes within their own party. And they have legitimate reasons to fear being, quote-unquote, primaried, as we saw Senator Lugar get knocked out in the otherwise safe state of Indiana in this last cycle. So as long as that happens, there will always be lots of local candidates who will say really crazy things, basically, in order to placate the extremists within their own party. And, at, you know, in the age of the Internet, word gets out fast, and so that's where you have Akin, Todd Akin, and Richard Murdoch, crazy statements about rape, you know, babies being a gift from God, and legitimate rape. That stuff spreads like wildfire, and so it doesn't take that many kind of crazy candidates or incumbents prostrating themselves to the right, or particularly different areas of the extreme right, to likely really push away a lot of swing voters on a national level.
And again, I'm speaking with Jeremiah Gorka, who writes about American politics and culture. His current work is focused on security, race, and the Republican Party, of which he is a former member. His recent work has been featured in Salon, The American Prospect, Tom Dispatch, and The Huffington Post. And he has an article at truthout.org, Shot by Their Own Men, How the Virginia Senate Inadvertently Predicts Republican Decline. But just back to the short term as opposed to the long term, the argument that you made, that because they'll have to pander to the right because of this gerrymandering, the Republicans will only have extremists, and those that the incumbents will have to go to the extremes in order to neutralize extremists running against them on the far right. And that's going to turn off a lot of people. going back to their successes in 2010, the strategy largely developed by Karl Rove and funded by the American Petroleum Institute, where they took these state legislatures in these key swing states. And that was, of course, a census, so that's locked in for 10 years. So it looks as if for at least the next 8 years, the Democrats are going to have a hard time taking back the House, aren't they?
Yeah, probably. They'll have to do a really sort of stellar job politically to get the House back. And, I think it's probably unlikely, especially considering how in off years there just isn't much turnout. And the turnout that does show up tends to be within demographics that favor Republicans.
So what should their strategy be then? I mean, already the playing field is rigged against them. What are they going to do? I mean, can you make an argument about democracy in this democracy? Can you appeal to the American people's notion of patriotism that this is simply outrageous to manipulate the very mechanics of democracy?
There are probably a couple of things they can try to do. I mean, one is what Democrats might think are against their own interests, since Democrats do some gerrymandering, not as much as the Republicans, but they've still been guilty of it some, would be to basically say that the party is now opposed to gerrymandering and wants to figure out some kind of impartial redistricting approach, maybe try to find some sort of best practice that and build on the experience of the like California-type committees that approach redistricting very differently than in the political gerrymandering approach. And then you hear some rumors about how the Democrats are out trying to encourage crazies to run in primaries against incumbents in places where if a crazy is able to primary the incumbent, then maybe there'll be enough Democrats in the district to win in a general election.
But it would seem to me that even if there's a possibility that is true, people like Murdoch and Todd Aitken, they're their own people. They're talking from their own hearts and minds, if assuming they have them. There's no way in the world you need to manipulate those people.
No, that's true. You don't need to encourage them, though maybe a little cash their way would help.
So tell me then about, we discussed earlier about what seems to have stopped them, and I'm still not quite sure about, has it been the media attention that's taken the steam out of this kind of stealth attempt to rig the Electoral College? I just would be suspicious that it's over now. If I were a Democrat, I wouldn't be declaring victory.
Right. So, is it a response to the media? I mean, very possibly. Politicians are extremely reactive as opposed to proactive, and so if they think something's gone dangerous for them, they'll get squeamish and walk away. So it very likely is the fact that this made national news when probably at the state level they were hoping that it wouldn't, particularly considering that the news desks in state capitals have shrunk so much over time with media mergers and cutting reporting desks all around. I think a lot of folks in state legislatures have been kind of used to being able to do stuff without getting noticed. So the fact that particularly the Virginia story went national may have made a lot of the politicians skittish. But is this victory? Yeah, I can imagine very easily that this is only temporary, and as with something like the Keystone XL pipeline, that the people who want it will just stop for a little bit and gather their thoughts and their powers and try again later on.
So, Jeremiah Gorka, then, is there a connection then between this new Republican Party that inherited all of the Democratic Party's Dixiecrats with the Nixon Southern strategy and have largely become a Southern party? And obviously, the South, the Confederacy, has a history of voter suppression with the Jim Crow, to put it mildly. And of course, there's a very important Supreme Court case now whether to overturn Article 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which means that the Justice Department has to pre-clear these Southern ex-Confederate states over voting and electoral issues. That's being challenged at the Supreme Court, and who knows how that's going to go. So give me a sense of how much the Republican Party is a Southern party and whether they simply can't help themselves because racism is in their DNA.
Well, that's one of the things that a lot of Republicans always deny, is the extent to which racism is in the DNA of the Republican Party, but it absolutely is in the overt ways that we saw with, as you mentioned, the Southern strategy, as well as plenty of covert ways and subconscious ways, considering that so much of what Republicans stand for is the opposition to any form of social safety net based on the notion of people getting it are indolent, and in the mental image of people talking about indolence, they usually have an image of a black person. And it pervades the party from the start of its modern growth since, say, Goldwater being the first Republican in years to get only single digits of black voters, percentage of black voters, and that's happened every year since. I think the Republicans cannot get away from their issues of race, particularly now that they so clearly see themselves as being the party of white people. They assume that minorities are always going to vote for Democrats. Democratic Party they see as being basically a party of color and the enemy, so they're always finding ways to basically get the most out of the power of the white vote. And yeah, the Republican Party has been very keen on getting rid of the Voting Rights Act. Every time it reappears up for, you know, renewal, they want to kill it.
Well, they have a majority on the Supreme Court, and they may be successful very soon. But when you said earlier that you talked to somebody in a right-wing think tank and they basically don't consider President Obama a legitimate president, even though he's won two elections very, very soundly and got reelected with a 5 million vote advantage over Romney, there's still this idea that he's not legitimate. So where does that idea come from, that somehow these people that vote in this makers versus takers idea, these people who vote are the takers, and that the Democratic Party is not really qualified to represent America because it's only basically a party that bribes the underclass to get into power? I believe that is their mindset. I mean, elaborate on that, if you will.
No, that absolutely is the mindset that many, since most Republicans are white, you can stereotype and say that white Republicans think that the Democratic Party succeeds purely by giving gifts, in Romney's words, to minorities in order to bribe them for votes. And of course, Republicans will absolutely deny when the inverse, to say that they're trying to bribe white voters with lower taxes, because they would say, oh, that's not a bribe because that was my money already that the government was trying to steal. So they don't think that that's true. You know, to some extent, maybe to be as imaginatively charitable as I can on this one, I think that a lot of Republicans feel like President Obama truly does not represent them, because by him being a black man and black equating with a Democratic Party of color, they feel like it's very much not a party with any interest in them. I think they feel like they're not being represented at all because they've created this wall that Democrats equal race equal not us. And then hence you get all these words of, you know, Romney's bumper sticker, you know, what was it, Taking Back America. You know, they want their America, and they think that the, you know, America of cities is minorities and Jews and people not like them. It can be awfully simplistic this way, and I think people feel it on a kind of an emotional level that they just don't connect with. And of course, you know, Republican Party politics tries to encourage it and say it's Heartland versus the ghettos on the Upper East Side.
Well, just in closing, Jeremiah Gorka, back to your article at Truth Out, Shot by Their Own Men, How the Virginia Senate Inadvertently Predicts Republican Decline. The point here is that this gerrymandering that's going to give them a short-term advantage and it's going to make them hold the House for at least the next 8 years, unless something miraculous happens and the Democrats catch on fire in 2014, the outcome then is what? That they will continue to be a minority party, and the more they gerrymander, the more extreme their representatives will be, and the more they'll turn off the growing majority. Is that the dynamic?
Yeah, I think that is the dynamic. I think that they're looking at having real challenges at statewide elections in states where they have a lot of gerrymandered districts. And I think they're going to have a really hard time on the presidential level, particularly starting in, say, 2020 and beyond, when they have actual incumbents and actual party candidates saying crazy and hateful things that will just drive too many people away. And in a slicing and dicing world, when you're not talking about always winning by 5 million votes, but often on a very close level, losing relatively small number of votes even through enabling crazy candidates through these single-party districts, I think is going to shoot them in the foot in the long term.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Jeremiah Gorka.
Thanks so much for having me, Ian.
And I was just speaking then with Jeremiah Gorka, who writes about American politics and culture. His current work is focused on security, race, and the Republican Party, of which he is a former member. His recent work has been featured in Salon, The American Prospect, Tom Dispatch, and The Huffington Post. And he has an article at truthout.org, Shot by Their Own Men, How the Virginia Senate Inadvertently Predicts Republican Decline. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about how Chinese hackers attacked the New York Times.
Hustling around Atlanta in the alligator suit. Getting drunk every weekend at the barbecue. And keeping it near.